at its core, poverty is about pushing down instead of having an opportunity to go up.
41,000 Syracuse residents were below the poverty line in 2016. What does poverty look like?
Deciding whether I feed my child or whether I put gas in the car to go to work.
What does it feel like?
It's, generally speaking, lack of access to opportunity.
The facts, the figures, the stories of our community.
Syracuse's 2016 poverty rate was 13th worst in the United States.
This is City Limits, a poverty project.
I'm Kijin Higashibaba. This is City Limits. The city of Syracuse is grappling with a unique question. What do you do with a highway that's falling apart? Interstate 81 that runs through the city has officially outlived its useful life, and there are plans to tear it down. What comes next is a very hot topic at the moment. And there are some who see this as an opportunity to make a difference in the staggering racial segregation and poverty in the city. In late November, about 130 people crowded into the Community Folk Arts Center in downtown Syracuse for a panel discussion called I-81, Racial Isolation and Economic Exclusion in Onondaga County. Osha Keaton was on that panel.
You can't talk about 81, and you can't talk about housing if you don't call a thing, and that thing is prejudice. That thing is racial discrimination. Why is that?
Why is that? And what does a highway have to do with racism? Locals call 81 the Viaduct. It sweeps over the city north to south with the Syracuse University Hill to the east and downtown to the west. Before the highway was built, there was a neighborhood there in the middle, a place called the 15th Ward.
Well, the 15th Ward was like a melting pot, we call it.
Richard Breland is 86 years old and has lived in Syracuse his whole life. He lived in the 15th Ward from when he was 2 until it was destroyed in the mid-1950s to make room for the highway.
It was an area around there where everyone would help each other as much as possible. We did errands for us. The children would work for the other families. And you had a lot of the ethnic groups there, to be surprised. And we got along very well.
Most of the people in the 15th Ward were Jewish or Black. Breland says Greeks, Italians, Poles, and Chinese people lived there as well. The ward had other names, too.
It was called Jewtown. It was called the slum area. And it was called the ghetto. Those are the three names that was associated with our community down here.
The 15th Ward was a poor, but by all accounts, a thriving neighborhood, just like Breland remembers. But it was destroyed to make room for a highway. Why? Emmanuel Carter teaches urban planning at SUNY College of Environmental Science and Forestry.
I think a good way to understand the route of 81 through the city of Syracuse is to actually go back to a map that was done in 1937.
This map was a part of a plan from the federal government to lift the nation out of the Great Depression. The idea was that the government would make it a lot easier to buy a home by backing mortgages. But they couldn't back all mortgages.
What it did is it put the federal government in a position to say yes to people that they considered in some of their official paperwork to be real Americans, primarily Anglo-German Protestants, and to say no to people who were Black, Jewish, or foreign-born.
The map divided the city into four colors: green, blue, yellow, and red. Green areas were worthy of 100% federal backing of mortgages. Blue areas got 85% backing. Yellow areas only got 15%. And red areas were considered too high a risk. They got 0%. Carter says there were two criteria for applying the colors. The first had to do with the condition of the buildings. The second was based on race.
Every area that had populations that were Black, Jewish, or foreign-born white were color-coded yellow and red.
This is called redlining, created by and paid for by the government. It means if you lived in a redlined or yellow-lined area, it was impossible to get a bank loan to fix up your house or buy a new one. So, of course, the value of your property goes down, and so does the property values of the other houses around you. I got a copy of the map. Most of the city is in red and yellow. The 15th Ward is a big block of red in the middle. Neighborhoods like Westcott and Sedgwick stand out in blues and greens. Fast forward to the 1950s in Syracuse when 81 was built. The population peaked that year at more than 220,000, and all those people were causing major traffic. And, just coincidentally, the federal government rolled out the Federal Highway Act right around that time. It's the bill that built the entire interstate system all over the country. Here in Syracuse, it was all the money they needed to solve their traffic worries. Downtown business owners wanted the highway to go through the city to help them compete with early suburban malls that are starting to pop up, and the 15th Ward was right there. Greg Tripoli of the Onondaga Historical Association says demolishing the 15th Ward also solved other problems.
I think that, you know, a good portion of the rest of the community of the city looked at that as an opportunity to make more money for the city and to eliminate, you know, from a racial perspective, for those who were using that as the impetus to break up, you know, a concentration of people of color.
Tripoli says city leaders thought if they raised the 15th Ward, they could get a bigger tax base from improved structures on that land. To their mind, the 15th Ward was a slum, not a thriving community. They wanted a high-speed highway right through the city, and people in the 15th Ward had no representation in government to push back. Within months, more than 1,000 people were told they had to clear out. Breland, the man who grew up in the 15th Ward, told me people did protest.
Response is, no, we have planned this, and this is the way it's set up, and we're going through with it. And you will just have to go. And that's, there was no it's and all about it. You had to go.
So what was it like? What was it like finding out that you would have to leave your home on such short notice and that it would actually be destroyed and you couldn't come back?
Well, it's kind of devastating because that was home. And, you know, when you live someplace for, you know, practically all your life and you know everybody and you had a lot of friends that you had met and, you know, you grew up with, it's like a family. Your brother and sister are leaving you or going somewhere or another, and you just get the feeling that, what am I going to do?
Okay, so we are at State Street and Harrison.
This is Harrison and Montgomery. We are walking down to, heading towards Adams Street.
Breland and I went down to where the 15th Ward used to be. It's where the Everson Museum and On Center are now. It's a flat concrete area, mostly parking lots and parking garages. We can see 81 a few blocks to the east. Breland says this used to be a neighborhood.
It's a whole lot different because you see people, more people in their homes or sitting on the porch or mowing the lawn or talking to each other on the street, carrying their grocery bags or whatever, going from one store to back home, and it was quieter, a whole lot quieter now then. And, you know, it was homey.
Some residents were given a little money to buy homes and move away, but most were renters, and their choices were limited because of their race. Most ended up in other yellow and red-lined neighborhoods on the south and west sides of the city. Professor Carter says those neighborhoods were pretty multi-ethnic at that time, but this huge influx of people from the 15th Ward changed that.
The American population in general had labeled these people as undesirable because they were minorities and immigrants, and so their arrival in the other neighborhoods began to devalue those neighborhoods.
There were people of color who had money to move, but Tripoli says that was often difficult or impossible.
If you look at a lot of the old deeds today from properties, you know, it's right in the deed that they can only sell or the only people that can live in that property or in that area are Caucasians.
Carter says redlining didn't just segregate people based on race, but income. All the people who could leave did and left the poorest behind. And that has a domino effect that goes way past housing. If people with money move out of the city and leave only the poor behind, the tax base for the city goes down, which means schools go down, which makes the city even less appealing to people who have money, so they leave or don't move to the city at all.
A lot of people live in the suburbs. not necessarily because they don't like minorities and immigrants, but partly to offer their own children a good educational opportunity.
That's what happened to the South and West sides when the 15th Ward was flattened to make room for a highway. Carter says the people with money and choices were the white people, and they fled to the suburbs and took a lot of businesses with them, and started this domino effect. Redlining was made illegal with the Fair Housing Act in 1968, but the damage was done. Today, Syracuse leads the country in concentrated poverty among Black and Latino people. If you look at a map of Syracuse, most of the Black and Latino residents are on the South and West sides, almost exactly where neighborhoods were colored in yellow and red on those maps from 80 years ago. It's not just housing. Carter says there are other factors to consider, too.
There is also a system of discrimination with regard to higher education opportunities, with regard to job opportunities, with regard to promotions within jobs and so on. So that made it so that a lot of people born into low-income neighborhoods, and again, I emphasize made low-income by the banks, okay, were not always in a position to move into higher-income neighborhoods because they either didn't have a job that paid enough, or they didn't have enough education to get a job that might pay enough, or if they were able to get a pretty decent job, they couldn't advance on that job because there were, in fact, patterns of discrimination that went way beyond the work of the banking industry.
Discrimination in housing continues, reinforcing those patterns. It's now illegal to refuse to rent to a Black person because of their race, but fair housing officials say it still happens. There are others who will simply refuse to rent to someone who receives government assistance, for example, and that is legal. And Interstate 81, the highway, it still plays a role.
So now here we are today, and I think one of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when we talk to our parents and those residents of Syracuse who have been here from the beginning and how they speak about this new I-81 project, the look of fear that comes across their face, where does that fear come from?
More on 81 and modern housing discrimination next time. For City Limits, I'm Kijin Higashibaba.
City Limits is a production of WAER Syracuse Public Media and is funded by generous grant support from the Central New York Community Foundation, Grossman St. Amour CPAs, and listeners like you. To support the project, visit the City Limits About page at citylimitsproject.org. Stay tuned for more stories from this series and subscribe in iTunes for automatic delivery of new episodes.